If you, who make less than $250,000 a year, which includes 98% of small business owners, you will not see your taxes increase one single dime. Make less than $250,000 a year, which includes 98% of small business owners, you will not see your taxes increase one single dime. $250,000 a year, which includes 98% of small business owners, you will not see your taxes increase one single dime.
You heard it here. That's the tax man himself promising you about, a year and a half ago, that if you'd vote for him and you make under $250,000 a year, you wouldn't see your taxes increase by one dime. In one such soliloquy, he even said, to be clear, any kind of taxes increase by one dime. Anyone here within the sound of my voice who wants to challenge the fact that every American who makes under $250,000 a year is paying more tax than he was a year and a half ago by at least a dime, just give me a call. 347-677-1835. We're going to talk about some news in a minute, and then we're going to get on with our show tonight about, well, the fair tax. This is the Fair Tax Show. You want to get involved, 347-677-1835. That's the studio line, 347-677-1835. We'd be loving to talk to you. We'd be loving to hear from you. You want to just chat about the fair tax? You got some questions about the fair tax? You got some observations about the fair tax? You got some objections to the fair tax? Hey, this is the place to call. We'll take it all. Do you know, on three different mainstream media news networks today, I heard this paraphrased news story. And like this, these were the words in a different order in some places. President Obama is headed out for the first summer vacation since beginning his second term. And one newscaster, a shill for the White House, did go on to explain that this is in spite of all the criticism that he's getting for taking, quote, too many vacations, unquote, that this is his first summer vacation since he started his second term. Now, break that down, folks. We are 90 days into the first summer of his second term. Now, he took some winter vacations in his second term, didn't he? You remember that one, don't you? And he took some summer vacations in his first term, 5. He took some winter vacations in his first term, 4. And that doesn't even include business trips to Camp David and things like that. So here is the Obama media out with a story leading the news. President Obama is headed out to Martha's Vineyard, by the way, for his first summer vacation since beginning his second term. Meanwhile, President Obama goes on the stump yesterday and today, warning veterans of the United States military that the next phase of the sequester, if he doesn't get his way, could put their benefits in jeopardy. Now, you talk about a spoiled brat. You talk about a person who uses people. That's this guy right here. He is out warning vets, and it's even questionable whether some of these things he's threatening to do. I just don't know about this. I didn't have time during prep to do a lot of research on this, so I don't know what the statutory limits are on what he can do to VA benefits and things like that. I know that statutorily that he cannot, he must service the debt. One thing he's threatened not to do if he doesn't get his way. He must pay Social Security. One thing he's threatened not to do if he doesn't get his way. He must pay the military services, the salaries. He will pay the salaries of most federal employees. In an unrelated story, you know, aside from the fact that the Affordable Health Care Act / Obamacare is going to grip millions of Americans by surprise when they go into their local library to sign up for the free insurance and they find out that it doesn't give them any insurance, it only requires them to buy insurance they couldn't afford to buy before the law required them to buy it. And still can't afford to buy. But Obama has set up, through the Affordable Health Care Act, these exchanges in the states. Now, some state, my own included, wisely, have not set up these exchanges. That the federal government has assured us that they will come into those states and run the exchange themselves. But here's the problem. Here's the problem. These insurance companies that were all in favor of Obamacare, that were really pushing, they were looking at this massive customer base, and they were urging Congress to pass this Affordable Health Care Act, kind of a, you know, you have to pass it so we can find out what's in it. Well, they're finding out what's in it now. Unfortunately for the poor citizens who are going to be headed for these exchanges, the insurance companies are not required to play. And so these insurance companies are starting to look at these exchanges state by state. And the major companies, Aetna, United, the biggie Blue Cross, they're starting to look at the limits that states are putting on what they can charge. They're looking at the required coverages, and they're looking at the fact that with these required coverages, alongside these required coverages and these low rates that they're going to be expected to take for these policies, that they have to hire or that they have to sell insurance policies to people with pre-existing conditions, with conditions that are covered from day one of the sale. And they're bailing out. They're saying, no, this state, we're not going to offer anything in. That state, we're not going to offer anything in. And you get down to the only state that I did any research on today, and that's our favorite state, California, does not have a single major player. The people in California who go to the exchanges do not have an insurance company that they can buy insurance from. wow, an unforeseen circumstance, I'm sure. And somewhat related to the Affordable Health Care Act, in fact, quite related to the Affordable Health Care Act, 2013 showed, let's just call it weak, to keep from calling it pathetic, job growth. But weaker than that, its statistics are out early this week that 77% of all those jobs created are, you guessed it, part-time jobs. 77% of all jobs created in 2013 were part-time jobs. Some of those jobs used to be one full-time job and are now two part-time jobs. More than 50% of that 77% are part-time jobs, which already, even with the one-year moratorium, are being limited to 28 hours or less. So President Obama's Affordable Health Care Act is taking the American family and limiting it to part-time jobs of 28 hours or less to feed their families. And, oh yeah, to insure their families now too. That's an unintended consequence, I'm pretty sure. But here's another unintended consequence. Forget, forget the evil empires of McDonald's and Wendy's and Walmart and Target and all these people, all these evil capitalists who are restricting poor workers to 28 hours a week. Dearborn, Michigan, this week, became the latest to join at least 31 other cities and counties to restrict all its part-time employees to 28 hours or less. Even government entities are restricting their part-time employees to 28 hours or less. And then finally, on the affordable health care front, Democratic congressman joined by Howard Dean are starting to call for the repeal of the IPAB. Now, does anybody know what the IPAB is? Take a guess. IPAB, Independent Payment Advisory Board. They want this board taken out of the Affordable Health Care Act. And what exactly is this board? This board is a board that Howard Dean and vulnerable Democrats see for exactly what Sarah Palin called it, what, 4 years ago now? They're death panels. They are the boards that decide who gets chemotherapy and who doesn't. At what age you no longer get a bypass. At what life stage you no longer get a transplant. These are the death panels that were talked about by conservatives and libertarians and wise Democrats 4 years ago, that suddenly the enlightened few are saying, oh my gosh, what did we pass, and now we're finding out what's in it. I wish someone had told us. Let's fix this. Oh well, I guess the world goes on. On Monday nights, we talk about ways to fix this. I'll tell you what, your Congress, a bunch of demonic, power-hungry mobsters are not going to fix this. Monday nights, we talk about Article 5, the United States Constitution. We dedicate Monday nights to Article 5 of the United States Constitution. It's our surefire fix for these problems. If you're interested in that, tune in on Monday nights. Right now, we're going to talk about how you, with the fair tax, can save a ton of money. How you can actually pay less taxes while looking at higher transaction-by-transaction tax bills. In the long run, putting literally thousands and thousands of dollars that you currently send to the federal government back in your pocket with a 23% consumption tax on new retail goods and services. That after this. I've got a feeling that the
tide is turning. His life so dear, for peace so sweet, as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery. Forbid it, Almighty God. I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
Hey, free market capitalist Missouri business owners, show Missouri and the rest of the country what hardworking, successful entrepreneurship looks like by advertising your business on Missouri Grassroots Radio. Get your message out to liberty-loving citizens who want to support liberty-loving capitalists. Target this unique and widespread market with your business's unique and valuable products and services. Contact us at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org for details.
Said that it is not constitutional under the Commerce Clause. They said it is constitutional under the tax. And as to the question about raising taxes for the middle class, if I may, sir, let's just look at the record. The nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office estimates that in 2016, 4 million Americans will pay the mandate penalty or tax. 75% of those people will make less than $120,000 a year. And the CBO says between 2012 and 2021, those folks will pay $27 billion in additional taxes.
That's a heck of a tax on someone who makes less than $250,000 a year. And we're here on the Fair Tax Show to talk about a way to fix this problem. Now, in review, this is our fifth show, and we're starting to get to the exciting part now. We're starting to get to the part where we actually talk about the nuts and bolts of the fair tax, what it can do, what it will do, and how it can put money in your pocket, money that really belonged to you all along, but that has been illicitly stolen from you, diverted to other things. And what we want to do is we want to take that money and put it back in your pocket, never again to disappear. We can do that, and we'll get a pencil and get a paper. We're going to go through a little bit of math here tonight. I don't want to lose you, and I'm not going to. I promise not to. We'll make this fun, but it's imperative that you understand this. If you're going to go out, if you're listening to this show because you like the fair tax and because you want to stay steamed up about the fair tax so that you can go out and spread the gospel, so that you can go out and find converts, so that you can go out and help us set the fire we need to set to make this thing a reality, then these are the kinds of things that you want to be fluent in. So grab a pencil and paper and follow along with us as we do this. While you're getting your pencil and paper and, oh, a calculator if you care to challenge my math on anything, then while you're doing that, let's just review. We started off by giving you a history of the income tax, and a tax that was introduced under the guise of paying for America's war debt and under the guise of being a tax on the wealthy. It was introduced as an income tax, and there was so much public upheaval to this that we created a class system specifically so that we could introduce a tax package that we could sell to the majority of Americans, because we were going to tax only the wealthiest Americans. That's the way the income tax came about. That's the way it was designed. And it was designed by the people who introduced it as such, as a tax that they knew within a generation would creep downward, until finally it included almost all income levels. That's why I chuckle today when I hear people talk about tax cut here, tax cut there. I mean, I have no doubt about the good intentions of people who talk about flat taxes and tax cuts for the middle class and things like that. But if you know anything about history, if you know anything about human nature, you know for a fact that those things are temporary, that those taxes will expand, that those taxes will eventually creep back into every income level and eventually capture everyone. We started with a premise. We start the fair tax discussion with a discussion about, and you know, when I was having this discussion with a friend today, I chose the wrong word. I chose the word evil, which suddenly sends up people's spikes and gets people's armor on and their shields up, and as though I were calling them somehow satanic. Taxing income, and here's where I use the word evil, is destructive. Taxing income is inherently a bad idea. Taxing income suppresses income. It doesn't expand income. It doesn't inherently make people want more income. It makes them want to find ways to keep their income from being income. It makes them not want to work those 20 hours of overtime. It makes people and corporations, it makes companies and wealthy people, it forces even middle-class families to make decisions that are not always the wisest decisions based on tax consequences. So we start by recognizing the fact that the inherent flaw in the current income tax system is that it is an income tax system. It taxes income. And when you tax income, you necessarily promote a recognition of class, of more income and less income. You know, we talked about the fact that outside the income tax, there is no reason for the federal government to have any damned idea what you make and what you have. And that's ideal. It is ideal because it is none of anyone in the government's damned business what you have or don't have, what you make or don't make. It's not your neighbor's business. It's not a guy who makes more than you's business. It's not a guy who makes less than you's business. That sounded weird. A guy that makes more than you's business. A guy, it's not anyone's business whether they make more or less than you. It just is that simple. Taxing income leads to all of the evils, all of the flaws that are inherent in the tax system. Let's go to the phones. This is Dave. Who am I talking to?
Yeah, my name's Joe.
Hey, Joe.
Hey.
Joe from where?
Montana.
Joe from Montana. How are you doing tonight, Joe?
We'll see.
Go ahead.
You're talking about the there's no reason for the federal income tax. So what makes you think this particular sales tax, this fair tax, is going to be any better?
Well, in the first place, I suggested that outside of the income tax,
mm-hmm.
there is no reason for it to be anyone's business but mine how much I have and how much I make. Right, true?
Okay.
So the fair tax starts off by paying no attention to class, by eliminating class as a thorn in people's sides, by completely ignoring, at least from the prospect of government. Now, I can't keep you, Joe, from caring whether some guys got more or some guys got less. That's up to you, you know? But what we can do is we can start with the government, and we can create a system where it is no business of the government who's got what.
All right. Oh, okay, let's give you that. Now, let's go to how large do you want the sales tax, this fair tax, to be?
To be revenue neutral, it has to be 23%. Now, I want it to be about 6% because I want federal government spending cut.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was going to be my next question because the government takes in about $1.9 trillion in revenue.
Okay.
So in order to match that, you're going to have a high sales tax.
You're going to have 23% to match that.
Okay, now I'm with you. I think that if you make the government smaller, then you could have a smaller fair tax, at least according to your theory and according to at least arithmetic. How about this? How about you eliminate the Federal Reserve and you don't have to worry about taxes at all?
Eliminate the Federal Reserve and you don't have to worry about taxes at all because the federal government would pay for the military how?
By printing up the money.
Oh, I see. So what we do is we just make money into so much paper?
Just like before 1913. Yep.
Well, now so you're going to put it to a gold standard.
You don't need a gold standard.
You're going to have some standard if you're going to go
before 1913. No, you don't need any standard. You just need to have the money out there. You need to have the money accepted by the government for a very, very small tax, maybe even an income tax, maybe 5%, or maybe even a fair tax. And then you make sure that way that the merchants and the regular consumer and the regular citizen accepts that particular piece of paper as currency. That's all you need.
Then you've eliminated the Federal Reserve, so who's in charge of the money supply?
The Treasury, like it's supposed to be.
Okay. And so the government decides from day to day, from year to year, with or without some legislative oversight, what a dollar is worth.
Well, you should have legislative oversight, but it should be a citizens' committee outside of the ordinary purview of Congress, because anytime you have any group of people, you're going to have corruption. That's the same problem with the Federal Reserve. The Federal Reserve was born out of the theory that, well, we have to be independent so that Congress can't corrupt us. Well, who's watching the watcher?
Right, so, exactly. So now mm-hmm. you create this independent citizens board, and what makes them different than what the Federal Reserve is now?
Well, you also have to make some reforms with law enforcement. You have to make sure the laws are put on the books and enforced, and that you already have an honest IG. So when the recommendations of the IG are taken up by the Citizens Review Board, you make sure that these people, they know that the penalties for being corrupt inside the Treasury are very, very stern.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So...
just like
so
having
we,
citizens in charge of the military. You don't want professional career airmen and sailors and Marines and soldiers being in charge of the military.
So my question is now, and I'm really exploring this with you. I'm not trying to put you on the spot at all.
No, that's okay.
I've never thought about this.
The Citizens Review Board is funded by Congress outside of the way they fund the normal congressional programs.
Okay.
Now, see, the Federal Reserve, people don't know this, but the Federal Reserve is about, at various times, will either be the first or near the third or fifth money-making corporation in the United States.
That's right.
They make you know that, right?
I do know that, yes.
Okay, yeah. So they give back to Congress about $16 billion a year. So that's their bribery to Congress to make sure that they stay in business.
Right. And
so
and fairly mm-hmm. independent of any oversight.
Right.
Yeah.
So if you eliminate them, and if you make sure the government is small, because the smaller the government, the fewer the regulatory agencies, the less power they have. The
correct.
Less power they have, then the less incentive that you have of the lobbyists to go to Washington to corrupt them. It's the lobbyists which run the country. It's not Congress. So if you have, instead of, I don't know, maybe 100 alphabet agencies and their sub-agencies, and you cut it down to about 10, you have what? Very, very few carpetbaggers going to Washington, and then in the form of, well, we're just here to let you know about our particular interest. They don't bribe them because there's no regulatory agency that's in charge of a particular environment or in charge of water or in charge of this or in charge of that, and you don't have the lobbyists. So therefore, you're reducing what we have now, which is crony capitalism, fascism, back to a state of at least some form of capitalism.
Okay, but my concern, Joe, is not about crony capitalism. My concern with what you're saying is
who's in charge of the money supply? Who's going to make sure it's honest? Okay.
Well, not only who's going to make sure it's honest, but who's going to make sure that it's somehow stable? You know, I mean, with a citizen overview panel. Now you've gotten rid now, I guess, of anyone who really and wisely so maybe is professionally or
well, they just switched from the Federal Reserve to be hired by the government.
Right, okay.
You have 150 PhDs working for the Federal Reserve. They can go work for the government in the same capacity.
Okay, all right. So we would want people on this citizens control panel who at least understand about money supply and money value and the worth of a dollar.
Yeah.
Okay. It's not just some people we go pick off the street.
No, and they're not funded by Congress, therefore they're independent, just like when you become a member of the Supreme Court, or if you're Bernanke or Volcker or Greenspan and you're appointed to a position for 14 years, you can't get off of it. So, you're independent of the people that you have oversight over, so there's no conflict of interest, at least theoretically.
Okay, so now, getting back to what we originally talked about, I'm not sure that I've got my head wrapped around this completely. We've got all this paper floating around. There's no standard to it. We expand it and contract it as I guess we feel we need to.
Right.
And so along we come, and boom, someone comes and blows up 3,000 Americans, and we need about $650 billion to go kill some people, and so we just print it up and start paying people.
Well, hopefully we won't be as stupid about that as we are now. We're in the abyss of corruption now. So hopefully if we can get rid of the Federal Reserve, that the abyss of corruption will also be lessened when it comes to imperialism. We're over there in this stupid so-called war on terror. But let's say we had a legitimate enemy, and we need a $650 billion. Isn't it better to print up money that's being supported and based upon a good working number one economy, which is what makes any currency stable? If we bring back the 6 million jobs, manufacturing jobs that we lost because of corruption, which were sent overseas and destroyed, and we bring them back here, and if we have low inflation, and if we have a stable economy, that's going to make our dollar a very strong dollar. So let's say we need $650 billion for this real enemy. So we print it up. We print it up without interest.
Okay.
And then as we're fighting the enemy, and hopefully we don't have this stupid, phony war on terror, it's not going to dent our dollar. Except a little, because there's inflation. But if the money doesn't come back here to be spent on goods, you don't have inflation.
Okay. But now the money unfortunately does come back here, Joe, because as a result,
industries grow, and then they take care of the population, they take care of the consumer who has enough money to pay for the goods, just like we did back in the 1950s.
But we've suddenly thrown $650 billion into a circulatory system that is not closed, and what has happened? Do we have inflation?
Well, it depends. $650 billion now is nothing. If it's in an economy which is working and stable, it's a piece of nothingness. It will eventually be worked off. It will eventually be burned off by the Treasury, which will have the power to burn, you know, money that isn't being used, to make sure that new bills enter the economy and the velocity continues. But it's going to be the money which will be ejected into the economy will be dependent upon the economy and the population.
Okay.
So
I've got to move on here, Joe. But I want you to do me a favor, would you? Would you consider, and I want to wrap my head around this, would you consider sending me an email about what your plan is? I mean, I think you have an agenda here, and I want to entertain it. I really do. And on some other night, I would love to contact you, and you and I could just spend a couple of hours on this.
Well, I can call it back to show. I don't send out messages through the email because I was well aware of the NSA way before it became well known the past couple of weeks.
I'll tell you what. Would you hold on for the next break? And would you?
Oh, sure.
Would you like talk to me on the phone or something?
Is your show over?
Well, no, I mean later.
Oh, okay.
We could exchange phone numbers in off the air, and I could get back with you. I really would like to talk to you about this.
Or you can come back from break and we can talk about it. Actually, the basis is this: you eliminate the Federal Reserve, so therefore
right.
You do not have the creation of money by debt. You don't have to issue bonds and then pay back the Chinese and the Japanese and
right.
the Saudi Arabia. Or you
back.
Do, right, you just switch the power from the Federal Reserve to the Treasury,
right.
And the Treasury issues money without debt. It just prints up money and pays for the programs as needed, as opposed
okay, so,
to, that's it.
So every, so the, and I can't spend more than a couple more minutes on this, but the gross salary of the United States Senate is, pick a number off the top of your head, $400,000 a month. So the Treasury just prints up $400,000 a month and sends it out?
Sure.
$400,000 a month, every month.
Yeah.
Just for the Senate salary. And then okay, so the gross salary of the military is XYZ, so they just print up XYZ.
That's right.
Monthly and send it out.
Right. Now, remember, one of the reasons why our money is in trouble is because we're something like now at about 102% of GDP.
Right.
And the Federal Reserve is borrowing at the rate of $85 billion a month.
That's right.
It's called monetizing the debt. It's paying itself for the money it borrows on itself and charging itself interest. The biggest
right.
Ponzi scheme that was ever created.
That's right. I'm with you. I'm all for killing the Fed. Don't get me wrong. Yeah.
You kill them off. You pay reasonable, rational programs. You cut back on the government like you're talking about. So instead of having a $2 trillion government and more because of the debt, you can cut it down to maybe $1 trillion, $500 billion, $300 billion. And don't forget, we're going to have an economy that's a $15 trillion to maybe even a $20 trillion economy, because we already have a $15 trillion economy now, which is worthless because of the Fed. But it's an honest, stable $15 trillion economy. No inflation. You have wages which are market-based, which people get, and in relationship to the prices that they have to pay for goods, they can afford it. So it's a number of components there, but once you start thinking about it, it'll fall into place.
Yeah, I'll have to think about how we can print money, because there's no other revenue source for the federal government now. We're not taxing
anyone. But doing it
now.
You're printing money now, but you're printing it and charging people interest. Instead,
right.
you print it, don't charge interest.
Don't charge interest, right. But still, in all, the... I'm not sure that I'm envisioning what's happening to the pool as the reserve or as the Treasury keeps pumping out brand new bills to pay the military and to pay.
Well, it's doing
to pay,
it now. It's doing it now, but it's doing it on.
And we know, and we see what the consequences are now. I mean,
because of the interest, the national
yes,
debt. Without the debt. You go back to printing money, and don't forget, there's two components. You take out the interest, and you reduce government.
Right. But you do not get to escape the fact that the bigger the sum of money becomes, the less worth it has. I mean, that sum of money out there.
But you don't need. But you decrease the supply of money by not having interest. Because when you have interest, you have to print up more money to pay off the interest. No interest, no further printing.
I understand that, but I don't see where any of the money that you're printing every month ever goes away. I don't see where the pool ever.
Where's it going now?
It's not, and we see what the consequences of that are.
It's only the consequences because they're overprinting, overcharging. If you reduce the government, you don't overprint, and you definitely to get rid of the interest charges. You automatically get rid of, must be trillions of dollars, by just not having interest payments.
Okay, listen,
right.
and with this I've got to go. Someone out there listening, Lloyd or one of you folks who knows a hell of a lot more about this than me, and will email me. Someone email me how this works, and let me know how we keep pumping money in without causing serious problems.
Well, you don't
because
keep pumping money. It's not like you're on the Titanic and you have to keep pumping water out. You're shrinking the Titanic. You don't have to keep pumping money. If you have $2 trillion worth of government programs, and you now reduce it to $1 trillion or even $500 billion.
Okay, yeah.
You're reducing the amount of money that is necessary to be printed.
You are reducing the amount of money that is necessary to be printed, Joe, but you have a continued sustainability. You have a continued need, a month-to-month need for more money. People still have to be paid. Bills still have to be paid month after month after month after month. And if there is no revenue for the federal government to buy these services other than printing more money.
But the revenue which we're getting now is from taxes and from borrowing. If you don't have the taxes and you don't have the borrowing, then people keep their money and then they have their money to spend on goods, which increases the economy, makes the economy grow.
Right.
You'll have to think about it for a while.
Yeah, I guess I did. Okay. I encourage you to call back. We talk. I'll tell you what. On Monday nights, we have a different kind of show. We talk about Article 5, and we try to get people fired up about that. And that would be a good place for this discussion.
Okay, Monday, huh? Okay.
Yeah, Mondays. Yeah, 7 o'clock is the hour of truth, and we're doing a series on Article 5 and how to get that done, and some of the things that we need to fix in the Constitution. And you sound like you got your finger on one of them.
Mm.
Okay.
So is it the same name? Is it the same name of the show? Or is it a different name?
It's the different name. This is the Fair Tax Show. That is the Hour of Truth, but it's me.
Hour of Truth. Okay.
And and you can go if you don't have an aversion to being on the internet to Missouri Grassroots Coalition Go to Facebook. Go to the Missouri Grassroots Coalition.
It's Hour of Truth, Monday, 7 o'clock.
There you go. All right. We'll talk to you sometime, Joe. Thanks for the call. Good call.
Sure. Take it easy.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Okay, that was interesting, and I still don't get it. I don't get it. You've got a finite amount of material that is worth a finite amount of money, and when you suddenly make the amount of money infinite, and that is ever growing, never stopping, the growth never stopping, I don't see how you don't create disastrous results. I mean but we'll talk about that later. And you know, Joe's right. Joe is right, and all of my other friends who claim that I'm on the wrong track here because 23% is too much and the government spends too much money, they're all right, and the government needs to be cut down probably a hundredfold in its size and in its spending. But that's a different argument. How we cut the government and the need to cut the government and what we need to cut out of the government is a completely different discussion than how the government raises revenue. And I'm gonna take some time, wrap my head around Joe's argument, and we'll talk about that at a different time. But for the rest of tonight, and for the rest of the show, we're going to go ahead and continue to assume that at some level the government needs some revenue, needs some income to pay its bills, that it can't just go out and print money endlessly, without terrible, terrible consequences. That's the way I've understood it. I'm not an economist. I'm certainly no guru on finances, but that's the way I understand it. We got another call. We're going to go to the busy phones. Hey, this is Dave. Who are we talking to?
Well, if it's me, this is Pete Weishart.
How are you?
Good. You and me had a roundabout conversation today on Facebook.
We talked about. Go ahead.
Well, I understand. My core political issue at this point is that Article 5 constitutional amendment convention.
Yes, sir.
Called
Excellent.
By the states.
Absolutely.
And because I think all the other reforms, matter of fact, I can't think of how many presidential primary debates there have been that somebody said, well, if we could only get this amendment.
Yeah,
and the fact of the matter is, most of those amendments are tied around people in Washington deciding to vote power out of Washington.
That ain't going to happen, is it?
It'll never happen. But here's, and I understand that you've been on this issue a long, long time, and yet, where are the PACs? Where are the super PACs? Because I hate to say it, any movement, quite frankly, takes a lot of money. So
yep.
If those things have been set up, great. If they haven't been set up, let's get them set up.
Yeah.
So that we can collect the money to do the advertising. Because most people, if you talk about an Article 5 constitutional convention for amendments to get out the states, I just talk Latin.
Yeah.
People have no idea, one, what I'm talking about,
right,
or otherwise, as far as that goes.
And then you run into the quote-unquote conservative crowd who think they have an idea what you're talking about, but start saying, oh, no, they'd come away from that. You know, the liberals would take over and they'd come away with a completely different constitution and we'd be a welfare socialist state forever.
The answer to that is 38 states have to approve the amendment.
Absolutely.
Have 100 amendments come out of that. 50 of the ones that I want, term limits, line item veto. Fill in. I've got, as concerned, I've got a list of 15 I could say tomorrow. Let the most liberal people have put their 50 out.
Well, 38
states have to approve it before it becomes possible. There are more states like Texas than there are California.
That's absolutely right, Pete. That's what, you know, this is something that I wrote more than a year ago now in an article that I wrote called it was titled Con, Bring It On. And that's basically what I said, you know, and I'm a libertarian, totally. So I say as much to my conservative friends who want to use the Constitution to regulate marriage and regulate prayer, as I do to my left friends who want to use the thing to regulate marriage and to regulate a right to abortion. You know, I say bring those things on, you know, because I'm sitting here talking about states' rights and I'm sitting here talking about individual liberties, and I like my chances a hell of a lot better than I like yours.
Well, 38 states. Now understand, I don't know what to do with this. This has been my issue for 5 years or whatever else. I have no idea what to do with that in reference to, see, for me, if it's not boiled down to effective political action, then all we're doing is talking.
You know, I'm with you. I'll tell you what I did, Pete. It's been 3 years now since I got invited over to an outfit called Freedom Works, which in my mind now, in hindsight, is just a bunch of people typing and clacking and doing very little. But I tried to start a group called Article 5 Now, and I got about over 6 or 8 months in a group where people talk a lot about rights and liberties and things like that. I got about 20 people interested in even discussing the issue, and then I couldn't get, you know, all we wanted as a political action was a core group of people in as many states as we could get to write letters to every one of their state legislators to say, here, demand this thing for us. And I couldn't even get that. So I'm with you. I don't know where to go now. I mean, I've got a show here with an audience. This is the best I can do. I've got no money. I've got no, as a libertarian, I've certainly got no damn connections.
See, my frustration is, I'm here in Springfield, Missouri. My frustration is I'm in a call center here in Springfield where we do calling for the Republican National Committee, the Tea Party, I'm calling to raise money every single day,
right?
And I don't know that anybody.
I've lost you, Pete. Oh, Pete, come on! Can you hear me?
To both solicit the money and to collect the money in, I hate to say it, but you have to distribute the money out to people who will commit to this particular political action. And I'd love to say, that life is sitting in the pub and sucking on ale. And that's where it's at. But quite frankly, the founding fathers were rich people.
It's true.
The American Revolution was some rich people who got together and said this is nuts, and they committed their lives and fortunes, and they were speaking very real economic terms. The political action committees and super PACs, let's get them set up. Let's let's have people start putting money into them, and let's that's what I'm talking, because quite frankly, if you want to reach people, you have to have money to reach them.
Okay, I'll tell you what, Pete. Now, I'm halfway into the show now. We haven't even started talking about the fare tax tonight, but Monday night.
And I understand that's not my. It's a secondary issue. This ends up being a absolutely bedrock core issue in reference to say I consider saving the constitutional republic that we're in. We are in unprecedented times, and this is the most unprecedented act I can imagine inside of the Constitution to do.
I'm with you. I'm with you 100%. Are you a Levin fan?
I am. I'm glad he came on board. Whether he does or not, and as I've perused his book, he's fallen into the trap that said we'll try to do something that's quote unquote a limited convention. Is it Compact for America?
Right.
Is doing the same thing. We'll get 38 states to pass it. And we'll control what comes out of this. And quite frankly, the controlling document for that convention is the Constitution and nothing else.
Right.
I'm with you.
I always have been, and I'm interested in talking to you more about it on Monday night. As I told Joe, the whole show, the whole Monday night show, is a series just like this fair tax series, except it is dedicated to Article 5. We talk about Article 5. We try to educate on Article 5. We've got about on and off 15,000 to 20,000 listeners there, and so we really like to work Article 5. I'd love to have you on. Hell, I'd love to have you on as a co-host every Monday night. But you know, that's, you know, I'm with you, and I dropped the format for the Monday night show about 6 weeks ago and picked up this Article 5 thing because I felt it important one day after I got into another super hot argument with a conservative friend of mine over this.
Well,
we can't do that. We're too scared. And
but what you find out is conservatives are as much elitist as any liberal.
Oh, absolutely!
We can only trust certain people, and the fact of the matter is the base of our Constitution is we trust people and we trust the states.
Right.
Broadly, we trust the states. Either we do or we don't.
That's right.
Okay. I will try to organize. Matter of fact, I don't know if this is the right number, but what. You have me on Facebook.
I do.
Give me a number for after 6 or before you come on the air where I can.
Right after this show, I'll go to Facebook. I'll private message you my personal telephone number, and you and I will just spend some time talking.
Yeah,
and we'll set up something because I'm with you. I don't know where to go. I know what my resources are. I know what my capabilities are. I know what's out there that's available to me, but I don't know where to go from there.
Well, and I've just because I've spent on and off. I've been doing this phone fundraising since 2001.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't mean I know how to put up campaigns. I'm just the phone, my system calls and I'm talking to somebody and say, hey, this is what we're doing. Give me money.
because I do have some contacts with some people who actually are savvy enough to set up, you know, to set things up, to organize things, and with some people who can do some publicity and stuff, you know. And to be perfectly honest with you, Pete, I've sat back here several times in the last year, year and a half, and said, God, we've got everything we need here but the money.
And it's not a cheap undertaking. If you don't ask for it, you won't get it. And if you don't have something to put it in, why ask for it? And if you don't have something to put it in with a plan on what you said, a PAC goes to quite frankly, to political campaigns, and the Super PAC is an educational. In other words, it's an issue. You put as much money in and you put as much money out to pound on the issue.
I probably live blocks from you, so I am going to private message you my number. I'd like to get together with you maybe over a cup of coffee, and if nothing else, and I would like for it to be a lot else, but if nothing else, let's you and I get together and talk about at least starting a small study group or something on an investigative committee or something on where do we go from here kind of thing.
Okay. Message me and what's possible to do, we'll do.
Exactly. Thank you. Thank you very much, Pete.
And you need to get back to the fair tax. This is not what this time is for. But I wanted to connect with you because we've got to find a way to get a handle on this. An actual handle that people can grab.
I could not agree with you more, and I'll be there with you all the way. Good call, Pete. Thanks.
All righty. Bye bye.
Good night, my friend. Okay, I'm up against a break now, and we're going to come back, and we're going to talk about that thing that I promised you we were going to talk about before I came back from the last break, and we've had some very interesting conversations. We've had two very good calls. I wouldn't trade them for anything in the world, but I do want to get into this thing that we're talking about here is exciting, and I absolutely do not want to dismiss anything that Joe or Pete said, but those are all different discussions in my mind. How much we spend is a totally different discussion from how we tax. How much tax we collect is a completely different discussion with how we tax. Whatever we do, and I'm with Pete on this, and he said this today, you know, until we get something under control with the repeal of 16, this is a pointless discussion. Yes, true. The fair tax, in my mind, is a no-go until we repeal or as a co-act, as a single amendment, we replace 17 with the fair tax. That is, we prohibit taxing income, estates, capital gains, corporations, and replace it in one fell swoop with the fair tax. But how does that help you is where we were going to go with tonight's show. And we are going to go there. We've got a little less than an hour left, and we can cover this easily in an hour. Keep those pencils and paper in your hand.
Yeah, well, the thing that people need to realize is economics, you know, is not about numbers. It's about humans. It's a very significant component to what makes us human. It's a very different program. It's called Getting There From Here, and it's about building a roadmap to restoring constitutional governance in the United States. It's about how we can win elections nationwide with conservative small government principles. It's about how to build and broaden a coalition a majority coalition that's committed to having a smaller government. And then the second night, I call dismantling the monstrosity. And it's about how practically to shrink the federal government, I mean really shrink the federal government, via the Republican Party, but we need a much, much smarter Republican Party, and one that's not scared of its own shadow. We need to have people who are seriously committed to constitutional principles, to family values, to a smaller government, running the Republican Party. And we need to have strategies, which is what the whole seminar is about, where we can make sure the benefits of smaller government are going straight to people. If you remember my first seminar, I love analogies. And in the first one, I talk a lot about cancer, how the government has really become a cancer that's consuming our economy. And in this one, I talk a lot about alcoholism, which is a very different disease. But politicians get to Washington and they become alcoholics. And, they can't understand how they could do anything but grow the government. And, you know, it's like we need to have an intervention with the government. Mm-hmm. We need to say, you know, you're out of control. You are an alcoholic. And you tell that to your congressman, and he's like, well, you know, we're gonna phase out my alcohol consumption over the next 10 years. But, you know, first, you know, I just ran out of scotch, so first thing I got to do is go to the liquor store. And then when I come back, we can talk about how we're going to, you know, phase out my drinking problem. That's where most people in Washington are holding right now. So it's about the necessity of eliminating government programs instead of cutting them. Because when you cut government programs, they just grow faster. The great divide in the Republican Party seems to be between a few hundred Republicans in Washington, on one hand, and everybody else. The millions and millions of Republicans all over the country really want to have a smaller government.
Folks, you just heard Lawrence Bivek, the free market warrior. He's returning to St. Charles County here on August 29th and 30th at the Family Vision Library for two nights of a free seminar so that you can learn about capitalistic values and free market principles. Bring your kids, bring your family, bring your friends, and join us at the Family Vision Library, 2020 Parkway Drive, St. Peters, Missouri, on August 29th and 30th at 6:30 p.m. Go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. For information on this event, it's all there on the calendar page, and I'll see you at the Family Vision Library on August 29th and 30th with Lawrence Bivek.
They told me that you had gone totally insane, and that your methods were unsound. Are my methods unsound? I don't see any method at all.
Okay, we're back. What a great hour. What an action-packed hour we've had. But we've got to move on here. We've got to move on, and I really hope to get Pete back with us on one of these Monday night shows and spend some time with him. I really would love to get Joe back, too, on one of these Monday night shows and spend some time with him. I'm intrigued. I'm wary. I'm cautious. I'm going to look into that, and I would like to have had some time to think about it, and then I'd like to sit down and talk to Joe about it seriously sometime. Okay, here we go. Now, we've talked about the fair tax. We've talked about how the income tax came about. We talked about how the income tax came into being as a tool of class. We talked about in the past, not in the first hour of the show, we talked about how 22%, and we showed you the studies, we gave you the links to the enumerated studies that go beyond proving the fact that for every dollar you push across a retail counter for goods or services, 22 cents is tax from everybody in the chain that got that item from a raw material in the ground or wherever to you. Everybody in that chain gets cut. Everybody in that chain collects money from you for the federal government to the tune of 22% of everything you spend. We talked about that. So we talked about how it would be wise, and the fair tax does, to eliminate corporate tax, to cut the corporations out as tax collectors for the government, to cut out corporations as hidden agents of the federal government who do nothing but collect taxes for them, hidden in the cost of things that you buy as though they were legitimate expenses, and hidden there so that you, the American people, will say to your government, hey, tax those guys more and leave me alone, when that tax really shows up in increased prices for groceries and gasoline and utilities and services and doctor visits and everything else that you can think of that you do or breathe or drink. So let's just cut that middleman out. Let's just do away with corporate income taxes, and let's levy a 23% revenue neutral tax on the sale of all new goods and services to individuals. And when we say to individuals, what we mean is this: corporations, companies that build things, people who provide services, they do not pay the sales tax on components of their end item. So that a company doesn't pay the sales tax on the wood that goes into the desk they build, or the varnish or the finish that goes on the desk, or the little metal handles. However, companies do pay taxes just like any other consumer on consumer goods they buy, on paper clips, on staplers, on the desks that they buy, on corporate jets, on limousines, on massage services. Of course, they pay tax on that just like you and I do. But they do not pay tax on anything that passes on to you. So there's no tax hidden in the cost of your desk that was a tax. Well, let's think about that for a minute. You know, I think I've thought about this before. And I think I disagree with – yeah, I should have thought that out before I said it. I have disagreed for long and long with the idea that companies ought to pay. I've got to think about that again, because that is a tax that would be passed on to you, because the company pays for it and they don't get any money from anywhere but you. So let's rethink that. But anyway, what we're here to talk about tonight is this 23% sales tax on you. And what I want you to do is I want you to remember now that there are no withholding from your pay. There's no federal income tax withheld. There's no Social Security tax withheld. There's no Medicare tax withheld. So if you go to work for 40 hours a week, for $10 an hour, you make $400. You bring home $400 a week. Let's say, then, for the sake of this limited discussion, that you are a salaried employee making $600 a week, yourself, your spouse, and one child. $600 a week. They're withholding $140 a week from your pay, and you're bringing home $460. That's $7,280 a year. Do the math. They're holding $140 a week on you. They're holding $7,280 a year. We're giving that back to you. Now take that $7,280 and put it right in the bank. Put it in a piggy bank right now. In your mind, build a piggy bank in your mind and take that $7,280 that we're giving you back of your money that we're giving back to you and put it in a piggy bank. Because last year, you lived on the $600 minus $140. You lived on that. You bought your groceries with it. You paid your bills with it. You did everything that you did last year with that $460 a week. So keep that $460 a week. Do those things again this year and put that $7,280 in the bank in your mind, okay? So you've got the same amount of money to spend this year as you had last year. Now, with that money in your pocket, let's go to the store. Now, it's been a year since they introduced the fare tax. So here's an item that you bought last year for $100. And you want to buy it again. Well, the retail value of that item is now $78. Because as we've discussed at length, 22% of that $100 is eventually going to find its way off of the bill. So that item that used to have a real retail value, a retail worth of $100, that's the cost of building it plus a fair profit margin for everybody in between, plus all the tax that they had to recoup from you. We reduced that $100 by the 22%, and that will happen. We've shown that extended. That item, that same item, now has a retail worth of $78. Now, without getting into the discussion again of tax inclusive or tax exclusive, I'm going to give you the argument. I'm going to say at 23% sales tax, let's add 30% onto the $78 price. When you add 30% onto the $78 price, you get a out-the-door price of $101.40. That is, that item that you paid for last year, you paid $100 for. After we introduce the 23% fare tax, you're going to pay $101.40 for. And that doesn't seem good, does it? You're paying $1.40 more for every $100 you spend. Now, wait a second. Okay? You're out of $1.40. But go to your bank. Go to that bank you built, and from your $7,280, take out $1.40 and pay for the item. Now, in your bank, you're down $1.40. But look. If you brought your pencil and paper, do this. Now, what we've done is we've saved our tax withholding and we put it in the bank. We have $7,280 in the bank and we still have the same amount of money to spend as we had last year. You with me? We went and we bought a $100 item for $101.40. So we went to our bank and we took the $1.40 out and we put it with our $100 that we spent last year. And we bought the same item. Now, at $1.40 that it costs your bank per $100 transaction, you can make, do the math, that's $7,280 divided by $1.40. You can make 5,200 $1 transactions before you use up your money in the bank. Follow me here. You're going into your bank, the money that you're ahead, the money over and above what you spent last year that you now own exclusively, that is exclusively within your control. You're going into that new $7,280 and you're taking out $1.40 for every $100 you spend. So before you run out of money in your bank, in your piggy bank, you have to spend $520,000. That's 5,200 $100 transactions. Are you with me? Come on now. You don't have that much now to spend this year. So you put $7,280 in the bank. Okay? You bought as much money as you could, all the money you have left now, just like last year, you spent. Let's say you spent it all on taxable items. You didn't buy anything used. You didn't pay any college tuition. You didn't save any money. You didn't buy any stocks or bonds. You didn't make any investments. You bought all taxable items. How much money did you spend? Well, you made $31,200 last year at $600 a week. You banked $7,280 of that. That was the tax you paid last year to come up with exactly the same amount of spending money you had last year, $23,920. Spend that all and figuring $1.40 dipped into your bank per $100 you spend, you have to dip into your $7,280 $334.88. Now, okay, I want to do this again. You make $600 a week. You pay, the government withholds $7,280 of that. So you bring home $31,200 a year before taxes. You bring home that now free and clear after the fair tax. You take the $7,280 that the federal government withheld from you last year and you put it in your piggy bank. You go out and you make a bunch of transactions until you spend all the money you've got on taxable stuff. And you've had to dip into your bank of $7,280, $334.88. Still in your bank, and you've bought everything you bought last year, $6,945.12. My gosh. How's the government going to survive when you're keeping $6,945.12 of your money that they considered last year to be their money? Well, we're going to talk about that when we come back.
Stop. Stop. Will you stop, Dave? Will you stop, Dave? Stop, Dave. I'm afraid.
Joined Missouri Grassroots Coalition yet? The results of the 2012 election proved that the grassroots conservatives need to work harder to make their voices heard in government. The best way for Missouri conservatives to make their voices heard is to join together within the Missouri Grassroots Coalition Network and show our elected that we are a strong, unified, conservative voice in Missouri. Go to the website, MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, and click on the Join tab. Give us your contact information so that we can keep you updated on the latest developments in Jefferson City and beyond. Also, sign up for grass fire alerts so that you can get immediate notifications when we need to call grassroots conservatives together in action. Use the MGC network to help your grassroots organization speak with a louder voice, combined with grassroots groups across the state. Together, we can strengthen the conservative voice in Missouri.
Can you talk if you haven't got a brain?
Some people without brains do an awful lot of talking.
Some people do, don't they? Okay, so you make $600 a week. Last year, the federal government withheld from you $7,280. This year, you're going to bring home $600 a week. At the end of the year, you're going to have brought home your entire $31,200. We're going to take the $7,280 that the federal government held from you last year, and we're going to put it in a piggy bank, leaving you $2,300,920 to spend. Now, this is important because this is exactly the amount of money you had to spend last year. This is exactly the amount of money you had to spend last year. Now, we're going to go out and we're going to spend all that money on taxable items. Tax, which is now part of the price of a retail good that has a lower market worth because we've eliminated the corporate income taxes. And so, at the end of the year, you've spent your $23,920 of fund money, and you've had to dip into your $7,280 for $334.80, leaving you $6,945.12 in the bank. Invest that in some stock somewhere or in your IRA, because that is new money for you. That is newfound money that the federal government used to claim as its own. That is your money to do with as you please. Now, all of this savings is in addition to the fact that you don't even start paying tax until you've spent all of the money that you should expect to spend for the quote-unquote necessities of life. We're going to talk about that next week, but tonight we're going to spend the rest of our fair tax time reiterating how in the world it is that the federal government can survive when they're getting from every family of three $6,945.12. Well, that's not true. When every family of three is keeping $6,945.12 that they used to give to the federal government. Well, the federal government has taken a hit, haven't they? They have taken a hit because the only reason you've got $6,945.12 left isn't because you're paying less direct tax than you paid last year in income tax. It's because you're no longer paying the 22 cents tax built into the price of everything you bought. The government has lost out in the deal because they're not getting the 23% tax from you, plus the 22% tax from the corporations along the line. And where do they get that money? Well, as we've said, first of all, and most of all, this tax is fair. This is the fairest tax I believe I've ever studied. And it's fair in the true and correct way definition of fair, and that is everyone treated equally under the law. That is a law, a tax law in this case, that recognizes no substantial difference in liability between two individuals based on anything. No substantial difference in liability or in the place in front of that law between any two individuals based on anything. That is a hard concept for American people to grasp. The first thing that naysayers want to talk about is the fact that all of a sudden now Joe Schmo, who makes $100 million a year, is paying exactly the same tax as Mary Bly, who's making $24,000 a year, as a tax rate. Well, yeah, that's the definition of fair. Everyone treated equally under the law. So this tax is fair, and as such, it's a tax levied on everyone. Now, what's unfair about the current tax, aside from the fact that 10% of the people pay 90% of the bills? What's unfair about the current tax is that no tax at all is paid by illegal immigrants, aliens, illegal aliens, people who lay bricks and get paid cash every day, never let anybody know they had a job, babysitters, waitresses who don't declare tips. But now we're just talking about the little guys. How about the prostitutes and the pimps and the drug dealers and the auto thieves and the art thieves? How about those people with all those hundreds of billions, yea, even trillions of dollars that moves from hand to hand every year as income that never, ever, ever gets taxed? Well, hell, those people buy cigarettes. Those people buy food. Those people buy cars. Those people buy stuff. So, oh, damn, there's that fairness again. Suddenly that guy's paying the same rate of tax as you. And then 2 weeks from tonight, when we get back onto the corporate side of this thing, we're going to talk once more about the other thing that makes it entirely possible, probable, almost certain, that the federal government will do as well or better than it's doing now as far as income goes, as far as receipts goes, when we let you keep $6,945.12 of the money they took from you last year. And that is the explosive growth of the American economy, the explosive growth in jobs, the explosive growth in production, due to the fact that corporations are no longer penalized for doing business in the United States, and the subsequent increase in the tax base, or the number of people who pay taxes, not by virtue of their income, but by virtue of the fact that they now have money to spend. And from that point forward, the economy just keeps getting bigger and bigger. Now, if we can wrestle with that other problem that Pete and Joe want to talk about, of making the government smaller, great, more power to it. We got more people paying less tax then, and less and less. And the more people we get, the less and less tax they have to pay. if we get the government under control. But again, that's a different discussion, and we discuss that a lot on Monday nights. But for now, what we did was we took $600 a week that you make, and we let you keep the whole $600. And we took the tax that you paid last year, and we put it in this piggy bank. And then we went out and we bought money, and for every $100 we spent $1.40 more than we spent last year. So we went to the bank and we got that $1.40, and we spent and spent and spent and spent and spent until we ran out of money, till we had spent all the $23,920 in our hand. And when we'd spent it all, every bit of money, the equivalent of what we spent last year, because it was every bit of money we had last year too, we still had $6,945 in the bank. So there you go. And the country is still doing as well as it was, or as bad as it was in the case of too much spending. And nobody's going broke. And because it's revenue neutral, and we can talk as we talk about decreasing the cost of government about everything else, but as of today, when you have met or exceeded your standard of living for last year, when your buying power has matched or exceeded last year, and you've ended up with $6,945 extra dollars in the bank, as of that moment, everyone who was getting food stamps last year is getting food stamps. Everyone who was getting Medicaid last year is getting Medicaid. Everyone who was getting welfare last year is getting welfare. Everyone who's getting free school lunches last year is getting free school lunches. Nothing has changed as far as government expenditures goes. The military is still winning wars in Afghanistan and Iraq and Iran and Kama Sutra. Yellowstone Park is still open. The president's still going to Martha's Vineyard. Nothing has changed. The federal government goes on as before. It's revenue neutral. Everybody is happy. All the welfare recipients are happy. All of the corporate cronies are happy. And you've got $6,945.12 more than you had last year. I'm going to take a breather. I've enjoyed this. If you have any questions, if you didn't follow that, if you did follow that and don't like it, give us a call here. We've got about, 20 minutes left. 347-677-1835. 347-677-1835. Now go figure out what to do with your $6,945.
Stop. Stop. Will you stop?
And the government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
Calling it anything else. I mean, it is a tax, so it and it's a fairly regressive tax. Awful lot of people in Iowa and in Oregon and Washington and Utah and places where we are, they're very poor people. They're going to pay a lot more money for electricity.
If you make under $250,000, you will not see your taxes increased by a single dime.
On September 15, 1787, the Constitutional Convention in Philadelphia took up debate on whether or not to allow amendments to the new Constitution and, if so, what method of amending should be adopted. Initially, it was proposed that only the legislature could make an amendment. Quoting from James Madison's notes of that very day, Colonel Mason thought the plan of amending the Constitution exceptionable and dangerous, as the proposing of amendments is in both the nodes to depend in the first immediately, in the second ultimately, on Congress. No amendments of the proper kind would ever be obtained by the people if the government should become oppressive, as he verily believed would be the case. Unquote. There followed a strenuous debate and many propositions, motions, votes, and refinements that arrived at the article as it exists today, giving states and the people the power to meet to amend the Constitution with no regard for the legislature or executive. The time that Mason foresaw, the time of oppressive national government, has arrived. Join us on Monday night in the Hour of Truth as we explore this method of peaceful revolution. We'll discuss how, when, and why. And we will be glad to hear your opinions on exactly what we need to do to fix the issues we face today, using Article 5 of the Constitution. Can we? Will we take our government by the horns, wrestle it to the ground, and return our republic to a government that serves the states and the people? Let's talk about it. Mondays, 7 p.m., the Hour of Truth. Call and participate on the studio line 347-677-1835.
Raise the federal tax on cigarettes by 94 cents per pack.
You make under $250,000, you will not see your taxes increased by a single dime.
'Cause I'm the tax man. Yeah, I'm the tax man.
Okay, we're back. We saved you $6,945 just tonight, just in the last hour. We want to hear from you. You can email me. David Court at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. You can follow us on Twitter, The Courthouse or Missouri Grassroots Coalition. You can follow us on Facebook. Listen, Missouri Grassroots Radio is a multi-talented organization. I am least of all talented at what we do here. More talented than me on Tuesday nights every week is one of our favorites, Cynthia Davis. Cynthia is an active member of the Constitution Party. She ran for lieutenant governor this past time, if you'll remember correctly. Very entertaining, very pointed, very opinionated, very down to earth. You'll love calling in or dropping by to listen to Cynthia Davis on Tuesday nights with Home Front. Then the Culture Vigilante comes along on Wednesday nights. So that's Lisa Payne Nager. Lisa talks education. She talks culture. She talks homeschooling. She talks legal. She talks about everything that is the culture of conservatism. I'm going to be making, I promised this last week, and we're not quite ready yet, but by next week, I'll be making an announcement on our new Thursday night host. Then, of course, on Monday nights, it's me again. It's Dave. Very, very, very proud to have been named a featured host by Blog Talk Radio, and proud of what we do here, proud of our listenership. Proud of the message that we get out. I'm back on Monday nights with the Hour of Truth, where, as you just heard in a promo, we talk about taking the country, literally taking the country back, not figuratively, not statesmanly, not rhetorically. We talk about how to literally take back the country by force, but by peaceful force. That is, without the permission of the legislature, and even against their will, without the permission of the executive, and even against their will, without the permission of the Supreme Court, and even against their will at times, we have been blessed with a method to take over the government. We talk about that on Monday nights in the Hour of Truth. We talk about Article 5.
We're not afraid to take them on. We are not afraid to go out in the streets dressed in the armor of truth and liberty and take on any comers. Bring it on. Monday nights, 7 o'clock. Hey, I'm Dave. This has been a great show. We saved you a little money tonight by adopting the fair tax. If you have any questions, drop me an email. Drop by Facebook and message me or get involved in some public chat somewhere where we can stretch this thing out. If you didn't get a chance to call in tonight with your questions, we'll be back next Sunday night with another version of the Fair Tax Show. And we're going to bid you good night for now. Thanks very much for coming along. Missouri Grassroots Radio is brought to you by the Missouri Grassroots Coalition, a cooperative of independent Missouri groups whose aim is to restore constitutional government. Visit us at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, check out our Facebook page, and follow us on Twitter. You can contact us anytime at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. God bless and keep you till next time we meet.